Jeg er Paul Varehaug, og dere hører på F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula 1. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
You want to
keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Mark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 838, June 30th, 2020. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. Season opener. Sunday. Lewis on Ajax program, stronger than dirt. Bottas on Avis program, number two, and loving it. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, are we ready for some racing? Have you been to the Poconos lately? One positive test will end the dream that's about to begin this weekend. We got more from Gary Sloan in thepitlane.com, and this week's vintage interview, 2008. You got to think about BMW, you got to think about Williams, you got to think about Peter Sauber, the whole package, the whole crazy thing that was happening back then, and you got to talk to who? Dr. Mario Tyson. Also, I want to remind everybody that your contribution to keep this program on the air is absolutely essential. No, we're not PBS. We are not going to be bringing in Rick Steves in a few minutes. But a couple of dollars here helps pay for service space. So you could just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How you been?
I'm doing very good, sir. I do like Rick Steves' travel escapades all over the world. So, good recommendation there. But, sir, Mr. Rogers, the long and harsh Siberian winter is over. It's time to go, as you say, racing in the beautiful Styrian countryside of Austria. Are you excited, sir?
We are excited. I've got my Grüner Veltliner on the chill box.
Will you put your NASCAR viewing pleasure on hold for a few hours on Sunday?
Exactly, but you have to admit, turn one at the Poconos is exciting.
Oh, so it's turn two. Yes, sir. Social distancing will be the order of the day in Austria. No fans, no podium, no driver parade. But who cares as long as wheels are squealing and engines are screaming, at least as they do in the beautiful Speak Softly Love hybrid era. And sir, this is very exciting. Most people, moi included, are expecting a Lewis versus Max or Max versus Lewis battle. But the forecast is Brooke Benton, a rainy night in Austria. What say you on this situation?
Well, you know, I think Lewis Hamilton, he's gone completely vegan and even beyond that. I think that could be a problem. On the other hand, Max is pumped up. He's eating a lot of red meat. He's on that diet the other race car drivers are doing, and one of them is Danica Patrick. Very interesting, but nevertheless.
What is that diet? Nature's Bakery?
I can't tell you right now, but once I talk to Rick, who's in the green room, I'll get back to you. No, it's going to be great. Are you kidding me? We got ration. We've been in the deep freeze. Oh my God, I can't even believe it. I'm going to be, in celebration, I will be taking my Traction Avant out of the garage for a cruise around. And guess what? I will scream out the window as I'm going down the freeway.
Well, sir, before we get into nitty-gritty details of the season coming up, some very exciting news. You remember once upon a time, Mr. Brazier and myself, we went to the restaurant called Il Marcio, also known as the Stag, in Mentmore, England, which was then owned by Mark Weber and his partner. Do you remember those days?
Yes, I do.
The food was delicious and pricing was very reasonable and we had a great time. And guess, you know, some years ago he sold the business and property was changing hands now and then. And voila, who is the new owner of the Stag? Take a guess, Mr. Rogers.
Well,
I'll give you a hint. Listener of F1 Weekly, one of the originals.
Not only that, but on the F1 Weekly staff.
Executive board.
Executive board gets the executive toilet. It's got to be the man himself, Mr. PB, Mr. Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Yes, Mr. Peter Brazier and some of his compadres in Mentmore area, they put a pool together and they bought this property and it will be opening soon. So please do stop by and say hello to Mr. Brazier and enjoy some fine dining and drinks and let them know F1 Weekly sent you here.
I think F1 Weekly is there spiritually and physically as Peter is the rep.
You know, next time I'm there, we will do a podcast or some sort of an interview we should do a live podcast from the Stag. Wouldn't that be something?
Would it?
I think so.
I'm prepared. I'm ready.
Yes, sir. So I'm very excited and I congratulate Mr. Brazier on this fine achievement. And hopefully when the virus is over, we shall do some fine dining there.
Yes, and this is a big coup for not only Peter, but the community that they live in. It's a big part of the community. They wanted to save it, revamp it, bring it back to that wonderful, I guess once it's post-COVID-19. But yes, they have big plans, and I'm happy for them.
Yes, sir. Okay, sir, going back to the Austrian situation, there is a lot of chatter on the interweb. Will we see a Bottas 3.0? Will Max make it 3 in a row at Red Bull Ring? Will the pink Mercedes be as quick as the silver Mercedes? But wait, it's now a black Mercedes. The new black Mercedes paint scheme, which is promoting anti-racism theme or drive or whatever you want to call it, it looks very impressive. Not sure if this will be for throughout the season or just to show solidarity with their numero uno in their this push together. And Lewis is very thankful for Mercedes to stepping up. And apparently, you know, now I hear that a lot of drivers are thinking of taking a knee, which, you know, taking a knee during the national anthem of Austria, I think they will piss off a lot of people in Austria. And you don't want to piss off Austrian people. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I mean, they do speak German.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, if they want to do a kneel, you can do it before the anthem or after the anthem or whatever. Or maybe just give up your seat to somebody else if you want to show real solidarity. And, like, you know, maybe Lando Norris can give up his seat to Greg Biffle for a race. Wouldn't that be something?
Well, that, or I sent in a suggestion. I suggested that give everybody a wallet size picture of Colin Kaepernick. And when the national anthem plays, you hold it up the same way Trump held the Bible in front of that in front of that church. Sorry.
That's beautiful, Mr. Rogers.
Listen, I have a lot of time on my hands, okay?
That's the beauty of America. You can travel from West Coast to the East Coast and be talking about great people.
Absolutely. Please continue. I apologize for interrupting.
No, that was well said. Okay. Well, let's see what you have to say on this. I am not expecting drivers to be rusty, at least not at the sharp end of the grid. Boys will be boys, and I do expect some push and shove from the usual suspects. Sadly, virus is spreading again in some parts of the world, so we better get 8 to 10 races pronto so we can have a legitimate world champion, which is very important. 7 deadly wins for Lewis, Carl Hamilton is the safe bet. But if anybody is going to rattle his cage, I think it will be Maximilian Verstappen, also known as Mad Max. Both have a big historic moment. Lewis would equal Michael Schumacher's record of 7 championships. And if Max wins the championship, he will dethrone Sebastian as the youngest world champion. And now, of course, there will be intense media and fan focus on the departing from Formula One, or should I say Scuderia Ferrari soon, Mr. Sebastian Vettel. The question is, will Sebastian stick it to Charles and run amok despite team radio saying, "Charles is faster than you. Can you please confirm you understand the message?" And I'm sure Sebastian will say, "My radio was kaput. What say you?"
Well, it's going to be interesting. Pole position is going to be fun. I'm telling you, this is it. Whoever's going to be hot is going to be on pole. And it doesn't necessarily have to be LCH. I see everything sort of messed up and turned around. I see surprises. I see pink cars. I see Ricciardos. I'm seeing a lot of interesting stuff on qualifying. I think something bizarre is going to happen. Could be rain. But I'm telling you, it's going to be the most exciting season opener that we have seen in a long, long time.
And you know, this year, not sure if they will do it, but Mercedes can use the DAS system, so that can also come in play. But if it's raining, then I will not be surprised, because in rain there is more slipping and sliding. I will not be surprised if Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen have a coming together if it's a rain race. And then maybe Lance Stroll can win his first Grand Prix.
Well, not only that, but with the DAS system, and I believe they're celebrating that film's re-release, but with the dual access steering, when they really push the steering wheel, I don't know if you remember the movie Moonraker and the Lotus, where the wheels would go out and it would go underwater.
That's going to happen here?
Exactly. I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. I started thinking about Moonraker and Lotus. My apologies to everybody, including Fernando, who's listening, of course.
No, you're right. It's going to be a very exciting season, and we're going to have a doubleheader. But let's hope there is no problem with somebody catching COVID-19 or coronavirus or whatever the flavor of the week is. We want to have a safe race and a good race, competitive race. And a lot of people are saying that tracing point, as they're calling it, not racing point, the tracing point can be a spoiler. And by the way, both Ferrari and Honda have said that they have found some extra horsepower. So let's see who can spoil the party. Party for Lewis Hamilton.
Of course. I mean, we don't want any kablamos or anything.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So shall we look at some Austrian Grand Prix factoid?
Factoise?
Si, senor. Okay, the first Formula One race, now we're talking Formula One championship race here, in Austria, was held at the Selfweg airfield circuit in 1964. Victory went to Ferrari driver Lorenzo Bandini, his first and only win in Formula One. The race produced 3 in a row one-hit wonders, and that was very interesting. In 1975, Italian Vittorio Brambilla won the race in his March. In 1976, John Watson gave Roger Penske his one and only win in Formula One. And then in 1977, Alan Jones from Australia gave the Shadows team their first ever win, first and only. In 1978, the race was won by Ronnie Peterson in his Lotus. And this turned out to be his last Grand Prix win before his tragic accident at Monza same year, driving for Lotus, of course. Estimate to Mario Andretti. 1982, one of the greatest battles in Grand Prix racing, all the way to the finish line in checkered flag, between Keke Rosberg in a Williams and Elio De Angelis in a Lotus. Lady Luck was smiling on the Italian that day. Local hero and expert on spaghetti culture, Niki Lauda was the winner in 1984, driving for McLaren. Among the teams, McLaren has 6 wins, followed by Ferrari at 5. Last time Ferrari won, that was in 2003 with Schumi. Surprisingly, Lewis has won this race only once, while Max Verstappen has won the race last 2 years. So pretty impressive. I'm sure some of our listeners remember Mark Donohue. He lost his life during Sunday's warm-up session for the 1975 Austrian Grand Prix, driving for his friend, Mr. Penske. And sir, did you know that Formula One fans can buy individual squares on the race-ending checkered flag, starting with the Austrian Grand Prix, and this is to help raise money for charity. And the 56 of the black and white squares will be available for fans to have their name printed on it, with the remaining 24 allotted to race promoter as part of We Race as One initiative. Would you like to see your name on that checkered flag in Austria or maybe at the French Grand Prix?
I would, but, you know, to be honest with you, I mean, you know, we have limited funds here at F1 Weekly, and that square should be reserved for somebody that's worthy.
Who could be more worthy than you, Mr. Rogers?
Very good point, but, you know, if Martin Brundle wants a square and it's the last one, I'm not going to take it. I'm just a schmuck. Yeah, Shay.
Okay, calm down. Calm down, senor. Okay, now we come to Chasing the Dream. Mr. Carey has donated $1 million of his own money to We Race as One Foundation, set up to bring minorities into Formula One. Survey says, let's see if Lewis Hamilton can top that. And you can always count on Bernie on any issues facing his ex-kingdom. He said about Carey's contribution, and I quote, "Now Chase has put in all of $1 million, enough to get a mechanic into go-karting. Maybe he should concentrate on doing what the shareholders want." End of quote. I think Chase is doing a pretty decent job, and especially I say this because he's not catering to CVC partners. Remember those folks?
My buddies?
They took billions from Formula One, never put a dime into it. So I don't think this business or any sports need people like that. Sir, next we go Funicoli Funicola Gran Premio at Mugello. This track is owned by Ferrari, and if this race goes ahead, it will be 1,000 Grand Prix for Ferrari. And it's not too far from Florence and close to a town. And I like this name very much. The name is Scarperia. Most likely this will be confirmed this week. Also hoping to land a Grand Prix this year is Portugal at Portimão, which is a very nice circuit located in the Algarve region of Portugalistan. Hopefully our man on the spot, Dr. Miguel, will be able to attend this race, if they allow spectators, of course. Now, I have not been able to confirm this, but reports are north of the border, Canadian Grand Prix will be held on October 11. And back in the early 70s, US Grand Prix at Watkins Glen and Canadian Grand Prix used to take place in October. I hope this goes ahead. And again, I don't know if it goes ahead, will they allow spectators? But I would love to watch a Formula One race this year somewhere. I don't think Texas will have a Grand Prix this year, especially with the return of the virus in Tejas. Do you think COTA will happen, sir?
No.
Canada?
No.
Now, I will be very surprised if any of the races in Europe, I think Monza will be the last one in September, will allow spectators. So that's a pretty sad scenario. Okay, sir, the wall may have come down in Germany, but F1 is going behind paywall next season. Pay television Sky Deutschland will take over from free-to-air RTL as Germany's F1 broadcaster from 2021 in a long-term deal believed to be worth around $60 million. That's some serious money. Do you like this trend of Formula One not being on free-to-air?
Well, I mean, I think everybody expected this to happen.
It should be free-to-air so more and more people can watch. The more people watch, the more sponsors will come. Let's see what happens. But, you know, we're heading to a very different world and a very different Formula One program in the next few years. It's going to be a different scene altogether, I think.
I think you're absolutely right. And on that note, let's listen to Gary Sloan.
Hello, listeners. My name's Gary Sloan, and this is this week's edition of In the Pit Lane. So the story all starts back in May when the Williams Formula One team announced that it was ending its partnership with sponsor Rocket with immediate effect, although no specific reason was given at the time. Deputy Team Principal Claire Williams said, I can't go into the detail on the ins and outs. What I can say is that we met all our contractual obligations to Rocket. Well, reading between the lines, it sounds a lot like Rocket did not stump up the cash. The deal was to run until 2023. It was rumoured to be worth $25 million per year, so Williams would not have walked away lightly. On the surface, Rocket seemed to be happy with the sponsorship, with co-founder Jonathan Kendrick telling Autosport, "I'm happy with the brand recognition and what it's done for me. I sponsored a team to get my brand out there, and it's got my brand out there big time, all over the world. It's even better than I expected." Kendrick has a long-standing ties with Sir Frank Williams, going back as far as 1978, when he was a fresh-faced youngster working with Goodyear and was sent to South America to look after the Williams racing team. Then at the age of 22, he set up his own business importing tyres from the then-unknown Yokohama Tyres, in which, after establishing the brand, he sold the company to Yokohama, subsequently making his fortune in financial services in the new mobile phones market. He retired at the ripe old age of 41. But like many a retired entrepreneur before him, he got bored, so he formed the ROC brand, which stood for Return of Kendrick, and joined forces with the billionaire John Paul Jones, DeJoria. Then last week, the story broke that Rocket was in talks to sponsor the Mercedes Formula One team. Williams expressed outrage. "We are absolutely shocked that a team with whom we have worked well, so well for a long time, would make an agreement with a sponsor who knows what happened." The report added that Williams is considering legal action to block the deal and prevent the Rocket name from appearing on the Silver Arrows as early as this week's Austrian Grand Prix. Well, the saga has all the hallmarks of our old friend Toto Wolff. Firstly, Toto said in February that making the team profitable was exactly what we have as our target, aiming to make funding the operation a no-brainer for Daimler. So another sponsor coming on board is exactly what Toto wants and needs. Now, Toto has links with Rocket, as they sponsor the Formula E racing team Ventura, whose team principal and shareholder is one Mrs. Susie Wolff. Toto has also been helping out with Ventura, making sure they get their engines, cooling system, rear frame, rear suspension, dampeners, software, onboard electronics and the wiring rooms from Mercedes. So the brand exposure from Rocket is enriched with the association to hopefully a successful Ventura team. It's also further boosted by the arrival of Mercedes joining the Formula E series for the 2020 season. So Kendrick knows he gets a bang for his buck when Toto is around. Other teams who have tried to land the Rocket sponsorship were Haas, Racing Point and Ferrari. Must be a bit of karma on Haas's part, as back in 2019 Rocket thought they had signed the deal with Haas, only for them to go with Williams' story and his rich energy, which of course we all know ended in tears. Toto has no doubt enjoyed getting one over on his old friend Lawrence Stroll in Ferrari, and he's clearly not worried about upsetting Williams, as according to Formula One journalist Pete Windsor, he's recently reacquired a 5% stake in the team, in which he's described it as a security investment. It could be Kendrick believes the new owner of Williams will be Michael Latifi, father of Williams driver Nicholas and the recent financial saviour to the team. Latifi may have plans for the team that does not fit with Rocket, and as Kendrick's loyalty lay with Sir Frank and not Latifi, he simply decided to jump ship. Well, Williams has now unveiled their new livery, with Sofia Anina and Arconis taking the place of Rocket as the most prominent sponsors. Sofia Foods are owned by Latifi, and he's persuaded Nicholas' personal sponsor, Lavazza, to sponsor the team with their logo now appearing on the engine cover. Latifi no doubt used the leverage of being the exclusive importer of Lavazza coffee into Canada as a bargaining tool. Here's an aside. Toto needs to keep Lewis happy, especially during upcoming negotiations. So Lewis will no doubt approve of Rocket, as they sponsor his inspirational brother Nicholas, last year driving in the British Touring Car Championships with Rocket Racing at the Motorbase team, and in 2020 Nicholas's move to Rocket Racing with Team Hard. Toto's world can be a small one. On a foot, no, maybe Toto is the real Rocket Man, as he's just revealed to thisismoney.co.uk that he's working on a deal that could put the Mercedes Formula One team at the centre of a new space race. "Space is a very early stage discussion," reveals Wolff. "We are not going to build a rocket, but we might provide services to someone who wants to build a rocket." So there you go. Toto's world knows no boundaries. So that's it for another week. More details at inthepitlane.com. Until then, stay safe and stay well.
Gary? Keep up the good work. Nass, welcome back.
Thank you, sir. Now we come to Willie Weber and his wisdom. Michael Schumacher's former manager, Willy Weber, has said that the German returning to Formula One in 2010 was the stupidest thing he could do. According to Mr. Weber, Michael told him he was bored and had to drive. Weber advised him he can only lose, saying, and I quote, "You can't win anymore. You won everything. You are the best racer in the world. You stand on the highest pedestal that exists. You can only lose now." End of quote. But apparently, Michael did not want to hear any of that. Weber said he himself was tired of packing suitcases and flying all over the world. He did offer his services during the European season to the Red Baron, but Michael told him, "If you don't go along, I'll do it myself." Maybe he learned this trick from Alonso when he signed with Ron Dennis. Quack, quack. Now let's go to the beginning of the Michael Schumacher-Willy Weber Association. Once upon a time at season finale of the German F3 Championship, hotel and team owner Willy Weber walks up to a young Michael Schumacher and asked him to join his team for next season. Michael refused, saying he did not have the budget. Then came the moment that changed the face of motor racing. Willy Weber told Michael, "You don't need to bring a budget. Just sign on the dotted line." And we all know what happened after that. Sometimes, Mr. Rogers, it pays to listen to your manager. Paging Mr. Alonso, please pick up the white courtesy phone at the Madrid Barajas International Airport. What say you, senor?
Fernando is a human being, Nasser. He's very sensitive, has made some mistakes, but still, we have to admit, he beat the Red Baron.
That nobody could do. But what is absolutely mind-boggling, Mr. Rogers, with all that talent, since he did that, score is 0 for him, 4 for Seb, 6 for Lewis. And of course, has nothing to do with his talent. We all know how super uber talented he is, but that's the way, you know, it goes sometimes. Okay, now, you know, talking of Alonso and Sebastian, there are reports, hints and allegations that they may go to Aston Martin. Can you believe that? Which was what is now the pink Mercedes. You see that happening for one of them?
No, but they might star in the new Pink Panther movie.
Alonso or Sebastian?
Alonso, of course. He's got the nose.
Okay, sir. Former Williams title sponsor Rocket, who split from the team earlier this year, is expected to switch loyalties to their engine supplier, Mercedes. Very interesting. Williams is understood to be considering legal action against Rocket over the cancellation of the contract, believed to be worth about $25 million, which is pretty serious money. And apparently Rocket was also looking at other teams before joining forces with Mercedes, and those teams included Racing Point, Haas, and Ferrari. And sir, you like music, so you'll be happy to know, we have a buyer for the LP version of McLaren's hit song of the season, Loan Me a Dime. And the sucker is, to the tune of £150 million, British pound sterling, National Bank of Bahrain. This should not surprise anyone, as the Bahrain sovereign wealth fund Mumtalakat is the majority shareholder in the group. Mansoor Oje is also somewhere in the deal, hiding in between the billions and billions of dollars. McLaren is also taking legal action against lenders who are holding buildings and historic collection as collateral, so they must be in dire need of money. The idea is to sell its properties and lease them back from new owners. If only Ron Dennis was still friends with Mansoor Oje, the team would not be in this mess. Do you think they will file bankruptcy?
Yes.
According to Zach Brown, they have the budget for this season, so it's very, very sad what's going on. But both the Williams and McLaren in bad financial doo-doo. And sir, some news on the hospital has said they're not going to just keep on releasing information on Alex Zanardi unless there is something to report. But he did go through a second brain surgery And we wish him a full and speedy recovery. Very sad what has happened there, and I hope he's as tough a cookie as they come, so I hope he pulls out on this one also. Any thoughts on that, Mr. Rogers?
Yes, obviously. Read his book. Great guy. I hope he pulls through, but it's pretty brutal.
And, you know, I read his book also, and if anybody has that book, please read the portion where he talks about a race. I believe it was a Formula 3 race at Le Mans, Bugatti Circuit, I believe, where he was involved. Michael Schumacher was there, and I believe third driver involved was Christian Fittipaldi. And then reference to that story, he talks about many years later, Willie Weber would walk up to him and ask him, do you remember what had happened at Le Mans? So it's an interesting read. Okay, sir, famous last words. Today they come from your favorite series, NASCAR's great legend, a driver I admired very much, Mr. Cale Yarborough, who back in the 70s, if I remember correctly, won 3 straight NASCAR championships. Very impressive. He said, and I quote, driving a race car is like dancing with a chainsaw, end of quote. Let's just hope he is not talking about a Texas chainsaw. And with that, we throw competition caution on the podcast. Anything else you want to say or discuss, Mr. Rogers?
No, I'm just ready for some ration. I got all my Austrian food and my French cheeses, and I'm prepared with all the health and vigor that Lewis Hamilton would like as well. And I have my Renault cap, and now, Nass, the best part of the show is the Vintage Interview 2008, Dr. Mario Tyson, and we're not talking about my primary physician here, are we?
No, sir. This interview was shortly after the Spanish Grand Prix of 2008, and I met him at the BMW Motorsports head office in Munich, and I also took the time to visit the BMW Museum, where they have the Nelson Piquet first car that became, championship-winning car with a turbo engine. And Dr. Mario Tyson's office was very simple. I was very surprised and impressed. And he was very nice. He gave me 20 minutes of his time. And we thank him once again after all these years. I hope our listeners enjoy this conversation with Dr. Tyson, a very important figure in Formula One and motor racing today. Thank you, sir.
Okay, I'm here in Munich with Dr. Mario Tyson, bossman of BMW Motorsports. Dr. Tyson, first of all, thank you for your time, and how are you today, sir?
Well, I'm fine. Obviously, we have been back from last race in Barcelona Sunday midnight, so we were back in the office on Monday morning, pushing again, because we see there is still one team on the grid that is quicker than us. So we have to find some seconds or tenths of seconds. And we are very busy, but also very motivated because the season went so well so far.
Before we talk more about racing, we'd like to know a little bit about you. And I read about you that you've been interested in mechanical things from a young age, and your first project was working on a Fiat 500 when you were 13 years old. And we all know Italian cars require quite a bit of attention. So can you tell us about this project, please?
Well, basically, the car, when I bought the car, it was almost gone already. It was not intended to be used on open roads anymore, so I could really buy it very cheap. Obviously, I figured out quite soon that it required some attention. So it was fun for me to, at the same drive and the same time, do my first steps as a driver and get into the technology of the car, modifying it, trying this and that, certainly repairing it from time to time. So that was something that it was number one on my list at that time.
And how old were you when you developed an interest in motor racing, and did you have any racing heroes or any particular events you remember growing up?
Well, I grew up halfway between Nürburgring and Spa-Francorchamps, so there was I was always close, and I was always interested in racing, certainly as a young kid, more focusing on the drivers. But then as I got more understanding of technology, it became quick the thing that really interested me. And so I was then with, when I was at high school and then at university, I was certainly much more interested in the technology of a Formula One car than in the drivers.
You went to an engineering college in Aachen and have been with BMW since 1977. What has been your biggest challenge and achievement so far?
To find my wife.
Was she at BMW also?
No, that was before my time. That was at university. No, in my professional life, certainly the biggest challenge was, there were two. First, to get the original Formula One team, Formula One project on track as an engine supplier to Williams. That was quite a difficult task at that time. And then, obviously, the switch to move on and have our own Formula One team in 2005 to set up the strategy and the master plan for the following years. That was the biggest challenge.
Okay. Now, you also worked in Palo Alto, which is very close to where we are based out of. Can you tell us a little bit about your time in California, please?
Yeah, I haven't really lived there. I founded the BMW technology office there, so I was there certainly quite a lot, but I didn't really live there. What I was... I think, at least at that time, it's been 10 years ago, Silicon Valley has been a very inspiring area, very much humming, very much on the edge of innovation, fantastic and fascinating environment to be in. I was especially overwhelmed by Stanford University, which is unique and so outstanding. So... I really enjoyed that, and at that time I said, from here on, it can only go downwards in terms of job satisfaction. But then they asked me to run the motorsport division, and I found out this is at least the same, maybe even more excitement.
In the U.S., your company is famous for their advertising slogan, the ultimate driving machine. Question is, when will your company or team be the ultimate Formula One machine?
Well, we have a clear plan where to be in at the individual steps of our 5 year of with the new team. The target had been in the first season, which was 2006, to be in the points. Second season, to be on the podium. Third season, to win our first race, which would be this year. And then from next year onwards, to fight for the championship. It is apparently not possible to plan championships, because if that was possible in sports, no one would be interested and no one would watch. Yeah. But we want to be ready next year to fight for it, and then we have to see how the races go.
Your company has a rich racing history, powering the first Turbo World Champion, Mr. Piquet, back in 83. What are the main benefits and reasons for a large, upscale manufacturer like BMW to go racing, especially in the engine freeze department now?
BMW may be different from most other companies. The BMW has always been in racing, from the very first day of the company's existence and ever since. So we cannot imagine BMW without racing, and we cannot imagine racing without BMW. So that is clear. And for BMW, racing has always been more than just a marketing program. We have always linked racing to our technology, to our R&D areas, and with the current Formula One project, it's just the same. We have created close links between this dedicated Formula One place and the corporate innovation center just a few blocks down. We have generated lots of synergies between Formula One and road car engineering. And we are really looking forward to the new regulations, which include the KERS system, Kinetic Energy Recovery System, because we see already that we will leapfrog current technology in this area with our Formula One project. And so we know we will have big benefits for our future road cars from Formula One and from KERS.
One of the most beautiful racing cars or a sports car was the BMW M1. Were you involved in that project?
No, I was not. I was with BMW at that time already, and I also thought it's just a fascinating car. But I was not directly involved.
There was a gentleman by the name of Jochen Nierpasch. I understand he's retired. Does he have any involvement in with your company now?
Obviously, he used to be the first motorsport director at BMW, so my predecessor, with a few other people having been in between. He founded BMW Motorsport, and he deserves a lot of credit for what has been developed since then. He doesn't have a direct or a professional relationship now with us and with the team, but obviously he is well known and a guest we really like to see.
I've known him since his days of driving race cars. I believe he was with Ford also. Okay, moving forward, you had mentioned about Williams. That partnership contract was terminated before the contract was over. Can you share with us what were the main reasons?
It's not true. It was no early termination. It was always foreseen in the contract that we could terminate at this point of at this point of time. The reasons were twofold. One was we discovered that with the engine, or as an engine supplier, couldn't win the championship anymore. In the years 2001, 2, 3, we had a superior engine which really made the difference. But nowadays the engines are within quite a small range, and the difference is made by aerodynamics or tires or whatever. So that was one reason. We thought when we want to win the championship, we have to do more than the engine. The other reason was that the two companies, Williams and BMW Motorsport, even after a few years, still were two separate companies, trying to do something together as good as possible. But I realized we would never get to the stage of, say, Ferrari, of a fully integrated team. And in our view, with the experience we had gained, we thought that was crucial for future success.
Was there any intention, I'm not saying like a secret intention, but was there like a plan from BMW to like completely take over Williams Grand Prix Engineering at some time?
No serious plan. We had loose discussions, loose talks with Frank and Patrick at that time, but I wouldn't call it a plan.
Okay.
And it didn't materialize.
Okay. We've seen a lot of problems lately with team rivalries between drivers. Do you believe in equal number one drivers?
In what?
Equal number one drivers.
There is no yes or no. It's not black or white. It depends on the individual drivers. It depends on the situation the team is in. I can imagine situations in which having one top driver is beneficial, sure. For us, so far, not just now, but also in the years before, it has always been the right way to treat drivers equal.
Turmoil between teammates is nothing new in Formula One. What is, in your opinion, best way to defuse such a situation, or at least prevent it from becoming public and very ugly, as happened last year?
Yeah. Well, first, you need to be straightforward with the drivers. They need to know where they are. Then you need to integrate the drivers into the team, They are not just people who show up, go to the car and drive it. They play a key role in the team. They are the engineers, the mechanics look at the drivers. They need their feedback. They need their cooperation. So if drivers are really well integrated in the team, this risk is very much diminished already. Then, obviously, there is a collision of interests, and there is a good possibility for collisions on the track, because if two drivers are about equal and they get the same tool, the same car, there's a high probability they will be close to each other on the track. And we had such an incident last year as well on Nürburgring. We talked about it afterwards. It was clear to all of us, to me as well, to the drivers, that it's not desirable to have that. So we discussed how we could avoid it in the future. And so far it works.
Sebastian Vettel, a most wanted man in Formula One. How much would you like to see him in your team in the next few years?
Well, we have had a close relationship with Sebastian for many years now, since he joined Formula BMW as a 15-year-old kid. And we have not just followed his career, but also put some effort behind it. So it would be somehow natural if at some stage of his career he would be back with us again. There are no agreements like this. And I think he is very well off where he is now, because it gives him the chance to really establish in Formula One without having the pressure of being in the top team. And, well, let's see how it is. We are in regular contact. We see each other at the races. We joke with each other, sometimes about each other. And it's a good relationship. No one knows what the future will bring, but if it happens, it would be nice.
You mentioned you put some efforts behind him, and recently there were reports that, again, it came from Williams, that they had a chance to get Lewis Hamilton, but BMW wouldn't go for it. Or what's to that effect? How far did that thing go? How close you came to seriously considering Lewis before he went to McLaren?
I was really surprised about that story, because I don't know anything about it. I have never, I can't remember to ever have talked to Frank or Frank or Patrick having talked to me about Lewis. Wow.
Amazing what you read in the magazines. Okay, you know, we do this program in the U.S. Do you think it's necessary for Formula One to have a Grand Prix in the U.S.? And can the manufacturers, because U.S. is the biggest market for everybody, can they put some pressure on Mr. Bernie to have a race in the U.S.?
Well, to us, it is important to be in the U.S. For BMW, the U.S. are BMW's best and biggest market. We were very happy to be there in the past years in Indianapolis. I know that there are discussions ongoing to return or to have even a second race in the U.S., which we would support as well. And I can only hope that next year or the year after next, the latest, we will be back.
Okay. Talking of drivers, Andy Priaulx is one of your drivers in the Touring Car Championship. Has he shown any interest, or is there any interest from BMW to try him in a Formula One car?
Too late. He used to race Formula 3 several years ago, but then he moved on to touring cars, and he has been so successful there, it wouldn't make any sense to try to switch camps now. he has been in the Formula One car. We know he is a strong guy, not just as a driver, but also as part of the development team. But for him personally, as a driver, it doesn't make sense anymore.
Okay. How long will the Sauber name be part of your team, and are there any plans to move the operation to Munich?
I don't know. There are currently no plans to change the name, and there are absolutely no plans to move it to Munich. When we bought into the Sauber team, we had very carefully evaluated the situation. We bought the team because of the skilled workforce in Switzerland, even more than because of the perfect wind tunnel in Switzerland. So it is absolutely, we will definitely stay there.
Did you look at other teams also before buying into Sauber?
Yes, but not. We didn't spend much time on that because it became clear early on that the corporate culture of BMW and Sauber, although different, were compatible, and that was to me the most important thing.
Okay. Formula One goes all over the world. Any particular city or track that you enjoy more than the others?
The two M's, Melbourne and Montreal, for the same reason. It's a great city close to the track, or the track is in the city even. The entire city is humming about Formula One then throughout the weekend. And there's a lot of water around, which apparently creates a very different atmosphere.
If you could have your wish where BMW scores their first Grand Prix win, which track would that be?
I would take the earliest possible, no matter where it is.
Okay. Most important question now, we're running out of time. Have you ever taken your F1 car for a secret spin?
Me, myself?
Yes, sir.
No, never tried, and I won't do that. Because if I drive a car, I want to do it properly, and it would be too time-consuming and too expensive to practice in an F1 car.
Okay. Finally, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly, please?
Liebe Fans, hier ist Mario Theissen. Ich wünsche euch viel Spaß mit F1 Weekly und natürlich mit der ganzen Formel 1 Saison.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Mario Theissen, thank you for joining F1Weekly.com.
And there you have it, Nas. Keep up the good work. Are you ready for a ration? Let's have a quick prediction. Who wins the Grand Prix this weekend? Both of them. Or no, one of them.
Well, I just cannot believe somebody else can win this race apart from Lewis and Max. But, you know, if there is rain, then we may be in for a surprise winner. That will not surprise me if these two youths don't win, you know. I'm afraid that, you know, both are very good, both are very feisty. Nothing is going to stop Max from winning a race. And, you know, who knows? Lewis has a lot of experience now, and maybe he's thinking championship, so he may not fight him as hard as he would have fought in 2007 against his teammate. Who could that be now? So we'll see how it works. But it would be nice if we can have a real surprise. Like, you know, when the 77 season started, it was Jody Scheckter winning in first time out in a Wolf. If Sergio Perez can win this race, wow, that'll be something. And if Sebastian Vettel wins, that makes a big statement too.
Charles Leclerc wins, Ricciardo P2.
That'll be very interesting.
Thank you. I want to thank all the listeners. We'll see you at the hot dog stand.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Everything is beautiful. Everything is beautiful.
In its own way.